We felt that it would be better to drop the introductory and advanced topics, have the topics all on the screen in the menu bar. Then when one clicks on the on a particular topic, that topic goes to the top, and all the screens in that topic then become that then show up. They scroll down, and then you can go to any one of those screens, or if you by default go to the beginning screen, you can go through them linearly, or you can branch around by clicking on individual screens, or you can go back, and then as whenever you want a screen, that particular screen will somehow highlight, change color, an arrow point at it, so you know where you are in your context. That will give you more of a sense of context and will allow you to navigate freely through your content. I think this relates to the tracking, the itinerary idea. Now, it's possible that the content of any particular topic may vary depending on what screens we're actually going to go through. So that has to be dynamic, but you can do that.
Yeah.
You can generate those screen titles dynamically.
Yeah. And the other thing that would be good to add on this is, you know, there's nice screens these days where, and some of this you just described, where you can collapse parts of it, you know, and only show part of the hierarchy, right? And the other thing that's very nice in the interfaces I've used is this bar is movable. So if someone doesn't really want to see this stuff, they just drag it, and it's gone. And if they want it back, they click on the edge, and the back it comes.
Now, if you do that, does that imply that the content area should grow? Because what's this over this the upper right part of the
screen? Yeah, sure.
That depends on us designing the content area to grow. This is not so trivial.
I think this content area is pretty small, especially when I watch the demonstration. It's hard to recognize the characters on the user interface. Just assume it have a cycle here, but I cannot.
Couldn't read the characters.
Yes, cannot.
Mm-hmm. You can make it zoom in and then zoom out.
Oh, that's another good idea to make it zoom out. Is flash zoom?
So that's more flash scaling.
Part. Yeah.
Make it scale.
So if I have a flash screen that's this big, I can grab the screen and make it bigger, and everything will scale.
Maybe.
If it's in a web browser, it better work that way. But if I don't know about a flash application, that's the point.
I guess
a web browser has to do that because you can resize.
In a web browser, it depends because I think, like, if you change the size of the screen and it had its initial area, it'll still have its initial area, but the web browser will be bigger.
Did you do that?
You
tried it?
Yeah. If you have it in full screen, though, it'll take up the entire screen if you have told the movie to take up the entire screen.
Sounds like we got to do some more experiments.
But in Flash, you can zoom in.
Yeah. You can zoom in about, and I've seen applications, I've seen user interfaces where you can move that bar in and out. Mm-hmm. A possibility might be that when you come into the program, the bar would start off on the left. Well, the left-right business we're going to come back to in a moment. But let's say it's starting on the left, and then it would push out to the right, which giving the user the idea that that bar is movable. And then they can, if they want, they can move it back. So you can get it out of the way if you want it out of the way.
It's good with some new ability.
Certainly giving the user more controls is something we want to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there other comments that we had about the content menu?
So the tooltip should be closer to the buttons.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that the tooltips.
Yeah, we already talked about. I talked about the content menu. The last question in the user interface.
No, we have to reduce the size of the content menu by 10%. But if you are moving
I said that already.
Yeah.
All right. There was a technical issue that came up with this week. It turns out that in Flash, for the sake of modularity, what we want to do is load and have every screen be a separate movie, okay? And that will also make the itinerary idea easier to program. In Flash, it's easy. Flash wants to load movies that have their own local variables, and are hence very modular, into 0, 0, that is the upper left-hand corner. Okay? That's not a problem for the menu bar, which is lower, but it is a problem for the, that's not a problem for the interface bar, but it is a problem for the menu bar on the left. Okay? Because any content's going to wind up snapping on top of the navigation bar. However, if we say that by default the content is appearing in the upper left corner, and the menu is appearing in the right side, we can, this scheme of loading into the upper left corner will work. So I thought I'd present that and say, is that acceptable? It's unusual.
Yeah.
Usually, expect to see the comment that we had. Brian made this point, is that you usually expect to find the menu on the left.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, how
about? But we're already doing things that are not like what you expect.
Yeah.
So someone's going to be in an environment, we'll get used to it pretty quickly.
I don't know. I would check an FAQ. Get somebody to check an FAQ and find out how.
We've done some research on this.
There are basically two methods of loading movies. The first one, which Professor described now, was the layer mode. Like you load the movie in a higher layer to your calling movie. The calling movie, they load it in a layer one, when the calling movie is in a layer zero.
Okay.
So that, then in that case, the layer one movie will always be positioned in the top left corner, 0, 0.
We don't provide any way to change that.
There is a way around to that. That's, you define in your layer zero a target box, which has a registration point.
Okay.
That means you can move. You don't want your top left corner to be 0, 0. You want it to be 20, 30.
Right.
So that they call it registration point.
Right.
Wherein you define a target and you define a registration point. And you load the movie
that
inside that target box in that registration point, at that registration point. But the problem is this, that works perfectly fine if you are just making plain movies which does not play with local variables. Only works like, if you have something like drag and drop, that doesn't work. Because it doesn't allow you to load those variables, because the layer zero still controls layer one. And it doesn't recognize those variables. But if you are not playing with variables, if you just have a plain movie where you are showing some interactions and just simple things, then it works fine.
So for technical reasons, it would be just, for the sake of modularity, we would like to present it on the right side. Now, I just thought, well, it's nice to have a looks thing. This is the...
How about top?
These are the help pages for...
Instead of right?
For AlphaWare. And you can click on any one of these, and it opens up all the screens. And the menus are... The buttons are not the usual buttons. They have their own set of buttons. So this is another... navigational scheme. This thing here is pretty close to what I had in mind for the menu bar. But it's on the left.
Yeah, they're all on the left.
Well, on the other hand, why do we have to be the same as everyone else?
Only because it would be more readily accepted. I'm hesitant to change too much stuff like that.
I'm not a peasant. But then I got into trouble.
Flying in the face of understood practice.
Well, if we decide that we really have to have the menu bar on the left, then we have a technical problem, which may not be so easy to overcome in Flash, which may be a reason to go away from Flash, because it's getting in our way. But we can talk about technical issues at another meeting. Page 3. Are there any further comments about user interface issues? Anyone? Two? All right, page 3, personae and collaborative interfaces. That's Drew and Dan Howe.
You guys are on deck. Mm-hmm. Who's your secretary for your group?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
If I can get this out of on the laptop.
Instead of plug and play, it's rip and pull. So, Deb, Morgan, how you doing?
Here we are. Oh, boy, what a great secretary.
Okay. Here are the notes I took. Hopefully they're legible and we can forward them on. All right, so the first question was, let's evaluate the effectiveness of the personae. One question was, is it important that the voice, or is it a problem that the voice does not match the personae if you know the person speaking or the person whose image you see? And the consensus was that it wasn't a big problem, but one solution might be to actually allow users choose a voice and provide a couple possibilities.
Or choose faces.
Or choose faces, right. In one case, we thought this was a good idea if you could say, I don't understand what this person is saying, give me someone else. Now,
you're out, Shoma. Not me.
Now, there may be a way of getting around this if this is too expensive, and that is actually have a professional voice person do the talking, and therefore many of the issues of not understanding might go away, or they might still be an issue.
And the face doesn't have to be Professor Blank.
Yeah, so the next point is the appearance of the persona. It's not important to have, the consensus was it wasn't important to have the image of the specific instructor. However, we did think about if you had more than one class which was using the same technology, it might actually be a good idea to have the images of the instructors to be able to quickly identify what class you are working with and to identify the topic with instructors and so forth, and to provide a continuation for your work. This also came up with if we were going to have students allow to contact each other, that it would be a good idea for them to have persona images, perhaps, or just pictures, and that they could be identified with the pictures, and that would be another way to provide a more personal touch to the communication. There was some discussion as to whether having a persona image was important at all, and we had some disagreement, I think, as to whether this was even necessary to provide an image of the persona. Yes, we want to provide a personal face to the content, but on the other hand, it may not be important.
We talked about that out in the hall while you were finishing wrapping up, and the initial idea that Brian had was that the face isn't really adding much personality to the voice. Well, part of his problem was the disconnect between the face and the voice anyway. And I said, well, we really want to convey the idea that these are characters that you can actually interact with, that they care about you and so forth. And a possibility might be to script it in such a way that these personae actually interact with each other, and so that the different personalities actually talk to each other. In the Universal Machine, there was a character named Nobby, who didn't look much like any real person, but did make different faces. And then the narrator, who didn't have a face at all, but just talked, rather. But sometimes they would talk to each other. And the narrator would say, yes, you have a point there, Nobby. And Nobby would say, well, I don't understand that. A possibility might be that I had in mind originally, actually, was that you'd have personae for students, and a student would choose their own persona. And every once in a while, a student persona would come up and say something. And it's not actually the real student. It's someone asking a question the student might ask, but the student might actually click on the student and say, but I have a question. Okay? And I don't know what that would do.
Well, you could have pre-identified lists of questions that they could select, and then have one of the student personas go and ask that question, and the answers would be there.
But if another thing that happened in the Universal Machine is that personae, or faces, would talk in balloons, and they would sometimes be humorous. Or they might be puzzled. I mean, their faces changed to express different kinds of emotions, how they were responding to what they were learning. They had personality. That's simply not here. If the faces had personality, if maybe they talked in balloons, if maybe they had humor, those are some ideas that we had.
Right,
that
so I
make
think
those faces much more effective than they are in a prototype.
I think maybe we're getting at a particular, a very basic issue here, and that is the images that are in the prototype seem to have no purpose except to identify the person, the purpose of the person talking, or at least the reason why they're there, and perhaps it wasn't important. However, if they had some personality, or if it was important to distinguish between different parts or different courses, then they might have more value. But in the prototype, it probably didn't provide much value. Anyway, so the balloons bring us to the next topic, which is voice and text.
Before you go on, could I make a comment on this first question?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. The last question is, how can persona convey the idea that someone who cares about the student available to help them learn? And, you know, we've been bouncing this around now for a while, and it's one of the key or core points or issues that we want to communicate in this project is that there is, you know, it's proven through research that the most important thing to student progress is how much their instructor cares about them, or genuinely cares about them. So the issue is, how do we convey that in a persona? And I was thinking about this over the last couple of days, you know, Bennett Eisenberg, who's the chairman of the math department, he also listened to this prototype. And his comment was, to me, he said, that doesn't sound like you teaching. He says, you're not teaching, no, you're just reading. And I thought about that, and I said, you know what, that's right. Now, you know, Tina Hao and Shoma and Zhang and Dave, you've all heard, everybody just about heard me teach, right? So would you agree with that statement?
Yeah.
I think it's true, too.
You are reading.
Just reading, right. Even though I tried to do it with intonation, with expression, still, it's really basically not truly effective teaching. So the one thing I thought about over the last couple of days is, somehow, I want to make this thing come alive. I got to turn it into as a real classroom somehow. So if I'm the persona talking, I've got to be teaching this stuff actively, interactively to people, not just reading a script. And so part of that involves real interaction. You know, like, you talk to people. You're not, you know, and that's why this idea of having the instructor talk to another persona is a good one, I think. Because then I can say, by the way, Brian, what do you think about that? And we can have some canned response that's in there that's, you know, appropriate. We can actually build in some of these elements that are needed. And I think the instructor can actually stop and ask also, which I think you did a little bit in the Universal Machine, are there any questions? You know, who has questions? And even the instructor can say, you know, George, do you understand this? This is stuff I do all the time. This is George. Point out their name. Do you understand this? And then the George persona can respond and say, no, I don't, you know, or something. But somehow I just build into this a more lively, interactive, real life way that good teachers teach. And that way we will make this thing communicate the fact that, hey, yeah, you're dealing with a real live person here, not just somebody reading a script.
Well, that is a really good idea, but that means that you actually have to change the way you write the script.
Yes,
so
I
that
agree.
Instead of writing script in advance, the script may actually have to follow the teacher.
Yeah, I think that's a really perceptive point, actually, because that's really what good teaching is all about. Good teachers don't follow the script.
I follow the script.
No, you don't. I bet you don't.
Actually, Bill, there are different ways of doing teaching, and there are very good teachers who don't appear like they're following a script, but they've actually
practiced so well that they
are following a script.
I agree. My wife's taken a course with this guy in the business school that's been 30 years teaching the same material. That guy's definitely following a script, but he totally knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just like, you know, he just lays it out there. It's, and he gives name tags to everybody, And he really draws people in. They have to respond. They have to answer. You know, like he calls them by name, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to incorporate that call by name part. You know, we could get into this really far if we wanted to and have people enter their names and actually use the person's name in voice. I mean, if someone's a student studying the system and they put their name in, the phonetics might be tricky. I'm not sure how to handle that. But we could... at least conceivably, we could do that.
Well, what's possible is there are several levels of possibility. But one possibility is you write a script by actually having one or two people. The professor interact with one or two students based on the content. The content tells you what you want to cover, but and it gives you a model for the script. But you then, instead of narrating it directly from the script, you actually have a student in the room and you record the interaction with the student, and then that becomes your script. And then your script evolves. It's sort of the professor isn't just reading the script that someone else wrote, but the script provides this professor some idea what we're going to try to teach today, and then you teach it with real students there, and that gets recorded. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the student responses themselves can be part of
the system.
Yeah,
I like that.
That means you have real students who really show up as personae, faces in the piece itself. The other, now pushing it a little bit further, to actually get the actual student involved, you can say, maybe you have two or three students, and one student who's actually talking to you and the second student is a real person. One person is going to really respond in the system, but you may say, suppose I have David here, and the person using the program is Sue.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sue, when she gets into the system, she says, my name is Sue. And then you can turn around and say, so, and you just call out while you're writing the script. You call out Henrietta.
Right, that's true.
And then it substitutes Sue in.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And then it says, what do you think? Do you understand what I'm saying? And then she has to either say something
or
type something in.
Yeah.
And then the agent, for the effective, the intelligent agent, something to do. No, yes. Or there may be certain answers that the student persona can give that you're looking for to make sure they understand.
Right.
So that's part of how you teach it.
It wouldn't be that difficult. There aren't that many names. I mean, but we could conceivably record a lot of names, too, and then just have them there, and then just have the software substitute the name in, and so it's you don't even have
names from fucking the foreign words. Students.
That's true. Or we could have people pick a name. You know,
we could also just refer to the student using the system with, so what do you think? It's not quite as personal, but they're the focus of the lesson.
Yeah.
So why worry about, like, how do we get their name in and have it said right?
And that could be.
When we can just say, so what do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes for everyone.
And then what can happen then when you say, what do you think, is maybe the student persona, which the student has chosen. So in other words, we have an artist create a handful of persona.
Mm-hmm.
And at an initiation, at startup time, the student chooses their persona, or if they want to create their own, they can. Okay? And that persona is a face that appears. That face then appears. What do you think? And the face appears. Then I know that, they're talking to me. That's me.
Right.
I have to say something.
it's good.
Okay. Any other? So we think so the consensus then is that we need to do some creative work with our graphical design, user interface design people to make
the
persona real, and it may affect the way we script.
Yeah.
But this also implies that professors actually have to be involved in the creation of the narration. We can't go to an outside professional narrator because they would not be able to do this.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm actually reminded of the study that says that the study that explored two different people, one a professional actor and another a monotone professor teaching the same lecture, and the students at least felt like they understood the material better when the professional actor provided the material, even though he had absolutely no idea what he was talking about.
Well, that's another possibility might be to have the script created by the professor in a dynamic situation,
yeah,
and then have it read,
acted
a professional actor, who, by the way, could be a Lehigh actor.
Yeah.
We can hire Lehigh students to do this.
Well, that's true. But I think Drew's got a good point that it has to be an actor. I mean, because it has to be real.
Yes.
If it's not a real professor, it has to be a good one.
What's the difference? Professor, actor, what's the difference?
Right. That's true. I've heard the one bit of advice that they said, if you ever have to come into a room that's full of adult teenagers or young adults, the best course of action is to immediately start speaking in a loud, commanding voice and act as if you know exactly what you're talking about, what you're doing, even if you don't have the slightest idea.
This may be a little on the negative side, but will everyone respond the right way to these personae? It should, would it be best to use personae for everyone? Or should we have some feature where the user can turn off the actual pictures of the personae and just have the sound or the text because they feel that it's not helping them and it's actually hurting their learning experience because they find it, for some reason, I guess, annoying.
Well, we had that option previously, and remember, on one of the previous groups, and it was agreed that we would have the option to be able to turn off all that stuff.
Because not everybody responds the way you want them to what you present them. So some people might see the persona as not being necessary and want to turn it off, so should we offer them that ability? Or
yeah, I think we agree that we should have everything option.
And how could we do that in a way that makes the lesson proceed adequately both ways?
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I mean, what was the other guy from Lutron? Paul Bryan and what's the other guy?
Bryan and Paul.
Paul said something about that too. If the voiceover's not there, he didn't want to have to wait until the audio finished playing.
Well, the text could be there, and then if the voiceover is not there, the timing should be tied to the events on that screen, not to the voice.
Mm. Also, how will the person who doesn't have sound enabled know that sound's playing? And should there be something at the start of the lesson to ask them, do you have sound available? In case, what if they don't have any speakers whatsoever and it's just playing along, but they don't know that it's playing along because they can't hear anything. But if they turned off the sound, they'd be getting additional text.
What a great segue into our next
slide.
Yeah,
let's keep going.
All right, so the, because I have to leave.
We're almost running an hour late here.
That's actually an issue that we discussed, and that is that we should have an options button or a way of saying sound, no sound, read the full text or read some brief version. And in fact, we did talk about that issue, and that when in the very beginning there should be a text note that says, we are speaking to you, do you hear us?
Right.
And if the answer is no, then you need to set your, we recommend that you set your configuration to be full text because there's something wrong with the sound or perhaps you don't want the sound. I think that is something we did discuss and it should be important. We had a couple other comments about the interface since we talked about the interface. In terms of having long animations where you have one slide but actually has a long animation, we thought that perhaps a progress indicator at the bottom to show you how far you have to go until you can press the forward button or until that segment is done would be a good idea. And that if you wanted to jump to certain points in that animation, that having thumbnails on that indicator might be a good way of doing that. And for the show me demonstration, we thought that a fast forward button might be a good idea too. If we're just reviewing the material, we would like just to say, all right, this is an animation, go faster. Do you want to comment?
A comment on the show me. Could it also be designed, instead of having the arrow move, that it was designed in like freeze frames where the arrow like pointed to something, and maybe you had a text box or there was an area already designated for description text, that if you didn't have the sound or you didn't want the sound and you just wanted a fast way through, this is how I use this, you know, the arrow goes to indicate what you're doing, the text describes it, and it just clicks through rather quickly.
Yeah, that's a good question, whether to just essentially show all the important steps rather than showing the transitions. And it would be an issue of whether you need the transitions in order to understand the step, in order to not miss what the next step was. The value of having the cursor move is that you can see where the cursor is going and what it's going to click on next. You have some time for that. Now, if you already know what's going on, then and you just want to flip through, then maybe it's a good idea to just say, all right, remove transitions, and just go step by step as one way of moving fast forward. I would want to provide both. In terms of the show me interface, we were in agreement that you shouldn't grab the user's cursor. So it really shouldn't be that you're mimicking one interface on two different displays. You really should provide two cursors, one that you control so that you can press the forward button or whatever to say, all right, I'm done with this show me interface demonstration. And there another pointer that is the person making the demonstration. We also suggested that the circles could be more regular and in brighter colors, gory details, I'm sure would be implemented. And the other issues that we talked about were in terms of the personae, were in terms of the voice and text, should the content be the same, was one issue. Let's see. I have down here, we said the content would be the same, but the content should be the same, but the actual text could be different. Perhaps should be different to have some variation occasionally, to really give two different ways of saying something, which is in fact how lectures are done. We often put up slides that have the text, like I'm doing right now, but I'm not reading the text. In fact, that would bore people to tears and they would not pay attention to me. But I'm speaking something else while I'm actually reviewing the text content.
Yeah, see, that's the way it's got to be done.
No, not necessarily.
So there's an issue here.
I can put out the real problems with that. We talked about this before. The data that we're getting from the respondents is very, very mixed. It really does depend on this came up in our group. We talked about this before. Suppose the user doesn't have sound. Do you want to present that? Or do you want to present full text?
And we also thought that full text would be an issue, especially for international students that couldn't keep up with the voice.
Some people in the survey indicated they didn't want sound at all, they just wanted to have full text. Some people just don't like the sound. Even if they could hear it, they still didn't want it. They'd rather read it. There are people like that. Another issue is Morgan Jennings pointed out that listening and reading two different things is hard to do, and listening and reading the same thing. Cognitively harder to do. It may be, in fact, why doing two different things is a little more interesting, because it's a little more challenging. It's a little harder to do, so it's actually a trade-off. It may be more boring to have to present the same thing at the same time, but it's also easier.
Difficulty isn't always a bad thing. When
yeah,
homework assignments are difficult, but there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
They're engaging.
On the
other hand, if it's a see, the problem is that there's a difference between a passive activity and an active activity, right? And if it's a passive activity, then if you provide things that are too difficult, it will simply be skipped. But if it's an active activity, then perhaps that you want to have something a little more challenging to.
A possibility would be to have text in two different modes, outline and full.
Yeah. This is actually the consensus we come up with, which is provide the options and then try them and find out what was best.
Well, that's what we're discussing. What are the options we want to try?
Right.
We could have a mode of here's an outline of what's going to be on the screen, and another mode for full text, and allow that to be prefaced.
Yeah, that sounds good. I just know that as a teacher, I never read what's on the screen.
But this isn't necessarily the same. Is multimedia the same as a classroom?
I think that's
sort of when you're in a laboratory, you don't have the sound card. Oh, you may have a sound card, but you may not have the headsets. You're missing content. It's not the same environment.
Right. So if they don't have the sound, then we have to present more information in a format. I'm not arguing with that. My only point is that it's. I think it's the most ineffective way of presenting material is to stand and read it from a screen. I mean, that, you know, of all the worst presentations I've ever seen and teachers I've ever been taught by,
we talked about that 9 months ago, and I'm totally unconvinced that there's a direct analog between a lecturer reading something on a screen, which I agree is horrible,
right,
and the multimedia presenting what's on the screen. It, the analog doesn't hold. The reason why I'm totally unconvinced about this is because I have watched students in laboratories and asked them, and the data is very mixed about whether they like it or not. It's not the same experience. Different. Some people will agree with you. They don't like reading what they're hearing, and some people really like it.
And of
it's
course
a learning style issue. Don't impose your particular way of learning and say that it follows because no one likes to watch a lecture. It's a different environment. Watching multimedia is not the same thing as an actual person lecturing at you. It's a different environment.
Yeah, except that a few minutes ago, what we're trying to do is figure out how to create an actual environment of lecturing. And so it follows naturally that if that's what our goal is.
Well, I don't remember saying that's our goal. That's not at all our goal. Our goal is to teach people.
Right.
Lecturing is just one method of doing that. This is another method. Right. Perhaps we can bring in some techniques from lecturing, but that does not necessarily what we want to do. And also I would make the point that students might not like the interface. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not serving the purpose.
Right.
Students don't like doing homework, but it serves the purpose. Right? Well, some people like to do homework.
Children don't like being disciplined, but it does serve a purpose.
I think there is a balance that we have to strike, and I think it is important to realize we're dealing with a different mode of communication, and that we can't just say this is exactly like lecturing or this is very similar to lecturing and therefore all assumptions hold. On the other hand, we can't say that this is just like reading a book.
Right.
Right. There has to be some middle ground where we can be effective, and I think the answer is we really just have to provide a few options, like you said, identify a few options, and then see what the students, we have to measure this in terms of what the students like, and also how well the students learn, and recognize that might be two different things.
Yeah, that's true, and there are extremes. I mean, we all listen to the radio, and obviously yeah. There are a lot of things that are read on the radio. You know, it's just that one. This has got.
And that brings up another, you know, brings us back to another point, which is, you know, radio, there is a profession of providing information through voice in a way that doesn't bore us or doesn't, that holds our attention. And in fact, there are a lot of techniques that have been developed for that purpose, and that we might not be knowledgeable of all those techniques, and we might need to.
Part of what we're trying to do in this project is to accommodate different learning styles. And I guess one way of doing that would be to give the users different ways of going through the content, and those ways are set by preferences. Mm-hmm. And we just give them different options so they can have voice only, text only, full text, outline text, and these are options. It turns out that it's a little bit more work, but presenting text in different ways, it's not that much work to do. Creating text in different ways is not so hard to do. Other things are hard, a lot harder. Some of the things that were proposed, I thought, oh boy, that's going to be hard.
I have one question about collaborative interfaces, Drew. Mm-hmm. In this third comment on the page breakout group 3 sheet, it said if two user interfaces subscribe to the same events, and what's the definition of an event there?
They say that mouse movements and button clicks is an event, which means really the very low-level windowing events of every time the mouse moves, the application gets an event. Every time the mouse clicks, the application gets an event. Essentially, gets an opportunity to respond.
Okay.
And this is actually what we were trying to address with the. We shouldn't grab the user's cursor. We shouldn't have two views of the same interface. We actually need to have a representation of each person on our interface separately from our own representation.
Are you using the expert mode?
For the expert mode. So when I contact a professor and ask, or a reference librarian and ask for them to demonstrate to me a interface, I don't want them to grab my cursor and essentially do it for me. What I want them to do is what I want to have happen is that a representation of their cursor appears
on
my
screen.
Which is different from my cursor.
Okay.
So I still have control.
I see.
But they can show me what they want to do.
That is interesting because it's different from the style, the NetMeeting. or the WebEx style where it's just sequenced,
right.
Controlled sequenced.
Right. That's how I would distinguish what we're doing from NetMeeting.
So what would be an example of two user interfaces subscribing to the same events? It might be two people subscribing to a certain show me or.
So the idea there would be a common interface, and every time I click the button, it would go that event would go to the common interface and be shared by everyone. So it would be as if both people clicked the button, and every time my mouse moved, then it would be distributed out, and it would be as if everyone's mouse moved that same way.
Okay.
So you have a sort of a common sequence of events. I think that's what this person was talking about. That's how I interpreted it.
Which comment were you referring to?
This is the second to last on the page.
It sounded like it was written by someone who knew what they were talking about.
That's written by Dale Parsons.
Dale Parsons.
Yeah, he's a PhD from many years ago. David Murray's boss. I thought the comment was a nice technical comment that Drew might appreciate. Make sure he saw it.
Okay,
that's
bonus.
It.
Bonus question.
Do you want to discuss? It's almost 6 o'clock.
I think I have to leave. Actually, I know I have to leave.
Why don't we stop the tape? Thank you.